Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by WordPress. Your customers want to find you. Build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/AllAboutAndroid. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you looking to hire a tech professional? With ZipRecruiter, you can post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android. This is episode 332, recorded on Tuesday, August 29th, 2017. We're your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
Yeah, how's it going, Ron?
It's going well, Jason. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Good to see you too, Florence Ion. Flo is out. She's actually en route to New York, right?
I believe so. I hope so. I'm going to see her later this week.
Okay.
So I don't know if she's going somewhere between now and later this week, but we have plans for Friday.
Maybe she'll be a hologram and you just don't know yet. That would be a sight. Joining us, we have not had Jace back in quite a while, so it's really great to have Jace Broda. Invite you back from AndroidAuthority.com at Jace Broda on Twitter. How's it going, man?
It's going great. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. It's been too long, and a lot has happened. We have Oreo now. Have you been testing out Oreo? I'm sure you've probably got a Pixel phone with it loaded on there or something.
No, I don't have a Pixel phone. I wish I did, in case Google wants to give me one. But I don't have a Pixel phone. But lots of good things about Oreo for sure.
Yeah, have you had a chance to mess around with Oreo either in a developer preview sense or on any other devices at all?
No, I haven't. I have been digging deep on leaks and rumors of upcoming devices. So we have a new flagship season come out. Yeah. So that's really been my focus. But Joe at Android Authority really focuses on that kind of stuff.
Right on. Excellent.
I like that reference to we're in flagship season, which is nice. It's that time of year. You can smell it in the air. It's flagship season. I like that.
The sun's out. The flagships are starting to bloom.
Yep.
It's true, though, right? We're going to talk about one of those flagships a little bit later. But before we get into everything else that we're going to talk about, because Oreo is the new thing, as we do every year, we always
Jason, I don't want to interrupt you, but is this breaking news?
Sure, why not? Victor, is this breaking news? It might as well be. It's breaking news. Yeah, okay.
All right, good.
All right, that got me in the mood here. So each and every week, hopefully, if I think there are enough flavors to pull this off, but each and every week I'm going to take an Oreo cookie that I've never had before and eat it. Why? Because usually
now this is an important moment in time, because 2 years ago these flavors of Oreos did not exist. It was just chocolate and vanilla, and that was it.
Yeah. So when did the like flavorification happen with Oreos? Because I know that there are some that date back to like 2013, so it's a little bit longer than that.
The flavor explosion. No, it's been in recent years. As I guess someone in Nabisco was like, listen, we got to figure out some way to sell more of these Oreos.
One thing we've learned. So I want to know, when was Oreo first? Like, when was it founded?
Okay. Well, so the history of Oreo was introduced on March 6, 1912.
Okay.
Which is 105 years ago.
So finally they're like, I think we've got a brand that has some legs. We should do something with this.
Well, what's interesting is that that no one knows where the name Oreo came from.
Oh.
Because some people believe it's a derivation. I'm reading from Wikipedia, so bear with me. A derivation of the French word or, meaning gold, and the earliest packaging of Oreo was gold, or the Greek word Oreo, meaning beautiful, nice, or well done. So who knows why they chose it, but it was basically launched as an imitation of the Hydrox, which I find interesting because growing up as a kid, Hydrox were not the kind of cookies I wanted. I wanted Oreos.
Yeah.
And so at some point it eclipsed Oh, eclipsed. It eclipsed the original. So there it is.
Oh, interesting. I never would have figured it went in that direction. I just kind of always thought Hydrox was the Me Too. But
so according to Wikipedia, again, 2012 is when they started the limited edition flavors with birthday cake. That was the first one.
Okay. Well, I don't have birthday cake here. I actually do in the other room. I left it there. I actually brought out a very interesting flavor, but I'm not going to open it today because somebody else, I think this is Burke's stash. Burke actually apparently has a stash of Oreo cookies. He's a fan of the Thins, which are the super. This is for the people that go, I like Oreos, but I wish there wasn't as much of that stuff on the inside. That's
well, this is how Burke keeps that boyish figure.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. I mean, these follow the smartphone trends of a few years ago. They got really thin and light and pocketable.
Yeah.
There it is, Oreo.
There you go. It's basically the cookie with very little of the middle part. So that's either a good thing or a bad thing for you. Maybe for this segment, I also need milk. Actually, it's going to be hard to move on. I promise it's going to get weirder.
Oh, Jason, there's a cookie dough Oreo out there in the world.
Yeah. There's
Neapolitan.
There's so many flavors, so many weird flavors. What was the one that stood out for me? It was the Halloween one. Oh, the
candy corn, right?
Candy corn Oreo. Oh,
hey, man, October is around the corner, my friend. I think that we might be having – every time I see on Amazon one of these weird flavors from 4 years ago pop up, I'm going to buy it and send it to your office, and they're just going to have boxes of Oreos arriving.
Yeah.
For the next year.
I am so not looking forward to this next year because, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like Oreos, but anytime I've ever seen these weird flavors in the grocery, 214 of them. Anytime I've ever seen these weird flavors in the grocery store, I've thought, wow, that sounds disgusting. Like, why would you part ways with the thing that works? What do you think, Jace? Have you had any of these weird flavors?
I have had none of those weird flavors, but I was just reflecting on Ron's comment. There was actually a public radio podcast in the U.S. that just came out last week about Hydrox. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Hydrox.
And, apparently there was a guy who was trying to start the brand up again. He bought the brand from Kellogg's.
Wow.
And wanted to start it up again to create an Oreo competitor. And I thought that was pretty fast. It failed miserably. But it was a fascinating story.
He's like, I'm going to give Oreo a run for its money.
I mean, I think that's so funny. Like, even if you go to the Wikipedia page on Hydrox, it says Hydrox came out in 1908 by Leaf Brands. And it says that Oreo eventually exceeded it in popularity, which resulted in Hydrox coming to be perceived as the imitator, even though it was the original. What a horrible brand story that is.
No kidding. You failed.
Great brand story, depending on how you look at it.
And what's ironic is that the people who created the cookie wanted the name to convey purity and goodness. So it's just like Evil One, the Evil Oreo One.
Amen Ra in chat put it very well. He says, he or she says, the Thins are whack. It's like eating a poker chip. And that is true.
There it is.
All right. So that's my review of the Thins. Next week we'll have a weird flavor because that's not really weird.
I love this segment and I hope someone makes a bumper for it.
Oh.
It's Jason's Oreo reviews. I love it. Let's do it.
All right. It's out there. It's out in the world. And that needs to happen. We need an Oreo review bumper. I'd be so down for that. Just throwing that out there. You know, if you want to take it and run with it, feel free. All right, actual things to talk about. This week we're going to be discussing Android's new AR core system, or as I like to call it, R-Core. The Samsung Galaxy Note 8, we know all about that now. The rootless theming engine support for Oreo that I hadn't heard about before. That's really cool. HTC's potential sale of the Vive division because they're not doing so hot in the smartphones still. Tons of feedback and a whole lot more. But Victor, it's your time to shine. It's time for the news.
You'd think they were coming straight out of Compton because Jason and Ron are about to get R-Core on Android News.
I like that you wavered a little bit. You hit like a little bit of a fishtail, and then you straightened out and you finished out strong.
Yes.
That was good, Victor. Yes. Good job.
Yes. Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it was a pretty long sentence, but
that's okay. You nailed it. You're doing awesome, man. Thank you for that. Okay, so this kind of, I want to say this came out of nowhere, but ultimately it actually makes a whole lot of sense. And I wondered not if, but when Google was going to do this. Yesterday, it was Tango. The Asus Zenfone AR that I have right here is powered with Tango. And this has been kind of I wouldn't say a big release, but a big release for Asus and for Project Tango, especially in the last few weeks. Today, it's R-Core, or AR-Core, Google's next step in bringing augmented reality to Android phones. This time, though, instead of bringing it only to the phones with specialized hardware like the Asus Zenfone AR, it's going to be supported by all Android phones running Android 7.0 Nougat and above. Google showed off the new system in a limited preview today with a full launch that's expected sometime this winter. They say they have a goal of 100 million devices by winter. And they really, I mean, I feel like this was a necessity because, you know, they've been working on Tango for a couple of years, and then Apple announces ARKit, and oh, by the way, all these iPhones, you know, hundreds of millions of iPhones are going to support it, you know, with a software update versus needing specialized hardware on a phone in order to do it. Google had to keep up pace. But I don't know, Jace, do you think that they were probably working on this well in advance of knowing about Apple's thing? The Verge article that I read kind of made it sound like Google saw what Apple was doing, and so they had to do theirs as well. But I imagine they needed more lead time than that.
I agree. I think they've been working on it for some time. But, I mean, Google's an engineering company at heart, and they're really good at making really, really cool stuff. Not as good as convincing the average user about why it's so cool. I mean, yeah. Geeks understand why it's cool, and we get excited about it. Whereas Apple's just, you know, they can come up with something that someone else has produced for a while, and they call it revolutionary, and everyone believes it. So, I think Google's been up to that for a while.
Yeah. What do you think, Ron? Are you excited about what you're seeing here? Does augmented reality excite you at all?
Oh yeah, I mean I love augmented reality. I've been very pro augmented reality all the way back to Google goggles. Remember that? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was, you know, I think that augmented reality is a great tool to, you know, that when using existing hardware can show off what, you know, the kind of next phase of computing will be. And that, you know, like the Microsoft HoloLens demos to this day, and even, you know, live, you know, the stuff I've seen that, you know, has been beyond just the announcements and the demos show that, like, the ability to add, you know, to augment your reality around you can be a real powerful thing for education, for learning, and even for gaming. I'm not surprised by this at all. I mean, I always thought the problem with Tango was all the hardware, right? Mm-hmm. We agreed, like, it was so limiting already from that. Like, what was the application? In order for it to go beyond that, it would need to work just on or close to any phone. So, you know, whether or not Apple beating them to the punch somewhat, although not really, but in public perception, you know, but with, you know, because Tango doesn't have the words AR in it or the letters AR in it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So the branding of AR Core, I do wonder if that is an influence by Apple's announcement with ARKit or ARKit, as I call it. Mm-hmm. I like R-Core. I think we call it R-Core.
Yes. Yeah. I just envision a bunch of people in a mosh pit when I hear R-Core.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hardcore.
It's got to suck to be Asus, right? You just release this phone with all the, you know, specialized hardware, differentiated, yeah, whatever, and then Google's like, oh, by the way, yeah, it's not so useful anymore. like 2 weeks later. They gave you the release. They gave you the 2 week release window, and they're like, all right, we did you a favor there. Now here's the new shiny thing that we're obsessed with.
Well, what excites me the most about this is particularly the third option that The Verge talks about, the light estimation, mm-hmm, feature. So this allows the augmented reality to be better integrated into your real reality. It looks like it actually belongs there. Whereas the stuff we have right now, it's a cool graphic just kind of pasted on the image, yep, in your phone, right? And there's a lot of possibilities there. I mean, if you think just real estate alone, or if you go to Home Depot, I don't know if you guys have Home Depot in the US or not, but if you go to Home Depot and you look at a new dining room set or new drapes or something like that, you could be in your living room shopping there and say, hey, how would these drapes or how would this dining room set actually look in my house? Yep. That's something anyone can understand and anyone can use. But right now, when you have the AR, it looks so clearly out of place from what you're seeing. So it's cool and fun for something like Pokemon Go, but for more practical applications, it's still got a way to go. So that part really excites me.
Yeah,
well, that's like yesterday, last week, Jason, with your with the thing that you brought to the arena with the dinosaurs,
mm-hmm.
right? Yep. Which, you know, it looked really cool, but every now and then they jittered, or like you could tell they're not there, right? It needs to be smooth, and it's got to bridge that gap between experimental and something that just works.
Yeah, and what you're talking about, Jay, specifically, that first photo that you pulled up, Victor, was perfect, where I was showing from the blog, it was the photo. Well, and you can kind of see it there, too, casting little bits of shadows. But that one, see the shadow being cast from the lion kind of in a, you know, in a sideways direction. And in that photo specifically, that's kind of part of what that's all about, being able to analyze the scenario and cast a believable looking shadow so it integrates with the scene better than just, you know, a sprite placed on top of something and pinned to a specific place in the area. We had Russell Hawley from VR Heads on Tech News Today earlier, and we're talking about this with him. And one of my questions for him was, you know, obviously Project Tango has specific hardware. Google says it's not like abandoning Tango. It just sees Tango as more specialized, more almost like a more premium version of this, but for specialized use cases, whereas R-Core is more for the masses. But, you know, the question came up of like, well, what does that enable? What is the difference between the two systems that enables? And the big difference that he was able to illustrate is that Tango is really good at mapping. You know, you can go up the stairs, down the stairs, all throughout an entire building and map walls and see that wall and understand that something can't go beyond that wall. Whereas something like this is really good for in the room, but it's not going to know what to do with the wall.
Well, and that's I see that as the difference between the hardcore tablet that a contractor or interior decorator buys in order to illustrate how they're going to decorate a room versus games where dinosaurs run across your couch.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, like, it's almost like enterprise versus consumer.
Right. Yeah. That's hardcore R-Core right there. That you're talking
hardcore
about.
R-Core. Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
Good job, Jason. You've been thinking that one up for a while.
Yeah, he said hardcore, and I was like, wait a minute. It sounds a lot like R-Core. Yes. We go with that. Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm excited. At the same time, I can say from my time with the Asus Zenfone AR, I said this earlier too, the whole holding your phone up and getting in on things and everything like that, that's cool for a little bit. You definitely hit a point to where your arms are tired. You definitely hit a point to where the effect is just kind of like, okay, I get it. And you kind of want to move on. So there's not a lot of longevity to that experience. Pokemon Go, as simple as it was, got people to continue to go back to it time and time again. Its AR was very basic, but they figured out how to make the game fun so that you didn't mind holding up your phone and doing these things. I was playing a game called Towers for Tango, and you know, that's building a tower. It's like a tower simulator game. You place it on a table. You can get in there and see the different floors of your tower and everything, and it's really neat. But then at the same time, like after about 10 minutes, you're sick of holding your phone out here and going over to the hospital and touching and coming back over here and everything. It just kind of gets tiring. It would be way better suited in a VR headset with that type of tracking, or you know, something like that.
I think there's really an arms race in this kind of niche because Magic Leap, I know they have a bit of a checkered past, but Magic Leap has an AI solution with this. So they want to for you to be able to map your room or wherever you're doing and have the app learn how to map that space better each time you do it.
Right.
And so that's their solution. But I also think that this is going to blow up. My prediction is it's going to become massively mainstream and hugely exciting for the average user. Once we stop looking at this big AR world through these tiny little screens. So if that's some sort of, you know, eye lens or some sort of Google Glass or something like that really gets our hands out of the way and opens it up. Mm-hmm. That's really a big game changer. Because right now through the phone, for the reasons you stated, it just gets tiresome pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I was going to say, you know, the next step of this is a HoloLens-esque accessory or Google Glass-esque accessory, Jason, that removes the need to hold the phone like that you see, you know, the stuff around you. And that's what I think is going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, for some experiences, for that real immersive experience, like that's where I want to see Daydream and R Core kind of combine. And Russell Holley, again, made a fantastic kind of correlation between that idea and Google's already said they have a standalone VR headset that they're working on that we're going to see sometime. And you better believe it's going to be exactly that. It's going to be R Core merged with Daydream to have an inside-out trackable solution. They've already got the hand controller. And so it elevates the smartphone level of VR even further and lets you do things like tilt brush, you know, and other things like that that would be really nice to have on the mobile side. And also, I mean, aside from that, then you take the more casual type of augmented reality, which is you go into Lowe's and you're trying to find a particular aisle. Maybe Lowe's has as part of its app integrated with this, not just with Project Tango anymore, but in all Android phones running Nougat, the ability to go into like AR mode. And it's like, what are you looking for? Screwdrivers. It knows where you are inside the store. It says go up three aisles and, you know, the arrow points you around the corner. Then maybe holding up your phone, that's actually very useful because that saved you time. You know exactly where to go. So stuff to look forward to for sure. We'll see how big it gets.
It's exciting. We're nearly in the future. It's why I can't wait for this.
What happens when we get to the future, Ron? What then?
Then the next thing. Then we're going to go live on Mars. I don't know.
Even future-er? Yeah.
In the near future, those of us, I feel like Android Oreo is becoming like this bountiful Christmas presence of things that can happen. And so for those of you out there who like to root your device so that you can get full theming support, you actually have something to look forward to with Oreo. The folks over at Substratum, which is the third party development team that developed a really great theming network for rooted devices, they actually announced a new theme support engine for Oreo that won't require root at all.
Nice.
Think about that. So it includes theming Android framework and system UI, any third-party app, custom fonts for third-party apps, mods to the status bar, and so much more. Usually, almost all of that stuff required root prior to before this. But now Android Oreo is going to incorporate full support for Sony's Overlay Manager service, which is an evolution of Sony's runtime resource overlay that was included in Marshmallow but actually sat dormant. You know how sometimes they do those kind of unpack and they realize some code is sitting there? That Sony's runtime resource overlay was there, but now it's unlocked. And so no root is required, but ADB shell is required to grant privileges to Substratum in order to make the changes to the theme. So you're going to kind of have to know what you're doing. But once the theme is changed, it stays and survives rebooting, which is crazy. But the privileges to change them do not. So you need to use the ADB shell to do that again. And this is going to be a paid app. So they realize they've got a little gold here. And so they're going to make you pay for it. It's going to be released very, very soon. So the walls around rooting just continue to fall down. I mean, now we've got full theming. That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, you know, more and more people like, and especially this XDA article, it was their exclusives. It was a very good article, a really good explainer on this. But when you kind of look through the comments and everything, so many people, and this is XDA, you know, a forum filled with people who are way into modifying their devices. And they're just like, well, this is the main reason that I've been still rooting. And if you don't have to root anymore, then, you know, why would I when it's this easy and it survives a reboot and everything like that? I can't recall if we asked you this last time, Jace, but were you ever into the rooting community? Maybe you still are. And is this something that would appeal to you?
Well, I was going to talk about that. I had the original Galaxy Note and I rooted that device. And that's how I got into doing it through XDA. And I got one of my first jobs with XDA creating shows for them.
Ah, okay.
So very, very familiar with that community there. But I haven't rooted a device since then. I did a show for them called To Root or Not to Root. And I haven't rooted since. So that's like 2011, 2012.
So then you decided not to root. End of show. To root or not to root. Not to root.
But a lot of the pros to root are now, you know, moot because... Mm-hmm. Root. Sorry.
Nice. No, I like it.
Thank you. I just thought of that one. Being able to have dark themes for all third-party apps.
Yeah.
That's a big deal when it comes to battery consumption. As a battery geek, that's a big one for me. So that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's not... it's not as easy as like going into the settings and saying install this, you know, this theme and apply. Like Ron said, it still does apply. It still does require some sort of a desktop hook in order to make that change. But once you make the change, you know, that's really so much more convenient than having to go through the steps of rooting. If your device is even easily rootable, you know, sometimes you have to wait for a while for some sort of, you know, way in to be discovered, and it's rarely as easy as you hope it's going to be. So this seems like a way around that, and I think it's going to make a lot of people happy. Full theming support. Who'd have thought? It's not the
hey, oh, I, for sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, I think at minimum, as you say, at minimum, it's going to make Substratum some money. So cause I can see a huge, you know, the modding community. I mean, there's a lot of people who go to Android for the. I tell this to people when they say, "Why Android over iOS?" I said, "Because if you want to, you can completely make the phone your own, and this is a great way to do that. And there's enough people out there to justify, you know, to and this is great development work too. So I hope they do make a lot of money.
Why Android? Because if you want to, you can.
Yep, exactly. There's a slogan for you, Google. So, all right. Well, let's take a quick break and thank our first sponsor of this episode. And we want to thank WordPress for sponsoring All About Android. And listen, the internet is such a wonderful place because every day millions of people go online to search for local businesses. I do it. I just did it like 20 minutes ago. And if you've got a small business or your own business, you got to wonder, does your small business even show up? When you create a website with WordPress.com, you make it that much easier for your customers to find you, connect with you, and hear how you can help them. Your business needs an online home, and in fact, it needs a WordPress.com website. You don't need any prior experience. You don't need to hire someone to do it for you. WordPress.com guides you through the entire process, and you can choose from hundreds of beautiful designs. In fact, the biggest challenge for me when launching a website with WordPress is figuring out picking a design, because there's so many amazing options and amazing layouts. And with WordPress, you can boost your website's visibility with built-in search engine optimization and social sharing. And you can activate other WordPress plugins for the functionality your business needs. Whatever you need your site to do, there's a WordPress plugin that can do it. It's an amazing community, an amazing resource. And with a WordPress.com plan, you get expert support is there for you as you help focus on what matters, growing your business. And this is an amazing statistic that is totally true and blows my mind every time I say it. 28% of all websites run on WordPress. All of my websites run on WordPress. You could do the same. You can go to WordPress.com and create your site today, and you'll see why 28% of the people use it. Can you believe that, Jason? 28%?
That's right.
More than a quarter of the internet is on WordPress. That's amazing. So this is you're going to get started today. This is what you're going to do. You can get 15% off any new plan purchase. Just go to WordPress.com/allaboutandroid, and you can create your website and find the plan that's right for you. Real easy URL to remember. That's WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. Get 15% off your brand new website. And as always, we thank WordPress for their support and making it so easy to run a business on the internet. Thanks, WordPress.
Thank you, WordPress. WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. All right. Yeah. It's time for some much-awaited hardware. It's true. It is. Because the Note series is always eagerly awaited, eagerly anticipated, even when the previous Note had so many issues. That really didn't seem to slow Samsung down. I think we could all agree to that. Samsung showed off the Note 8 at an event last week, last Wednesday morning. I was here with Leo Laporte. We covered the event live. And got to say, their presentation skills were on point. They did a really good job with that event as far as
they stepped it up.
Yeah, the stage setup and everything was really cool. If you haven't seen video of it, you got to check it out. It's a really interesting display. And they didn't have any Broadway performers, you know, romping through there. So that was a plus immediately. Okay, so the Note 8, designed similar to the S8 and the S8 Plus with a 6.3-inch infinity display. Actually makes it feel smaller because you have, you know, it's actually very similar in many ways to this S8 Plus that I have here. I'll take it out of the case. But, you know, kind of the infinity display that drops off the sides here. So it makes the phone, you know, it just reduces that body and screen ratio. And so it makes the phone feel a lot tighter, more cohesive, and smaller, even though it has a 6.3-inch display. Snapdragon 835 in the U.S., 6 gigs of RAM, 64, 128, and 256 gig storage options. The S Pen, of course, is on here, as we can expect with the Note series. It can do new things like a live message GIF feature where you write out, you know, things and then you send it in a format that everyone can read, and it's like an animated GIF that shows you the writing in real time as you wrote it. Kind of interesting, kitschy stuff like that. S Pen can also do live translation of text, among other things. You can write on the lock screen as you have been able to do in the past, but now up to 100 pages of memory in order to do that. So you never have to unlock your phone. You can write up to 100 pages of handwriting on your lock screen, which is really cool. It's the first Samsung premium device with a dual camera on board. Has a wide angle 12 megapixel at f1.7 aperture and a 12 megapixel telephoto camera that gives you 2x optical zoom. It also gives you the life focus mode, which is basically the bokeh style portrait mode you'd see on iOS. Does that in real time, so you see the effects as you go, and you can adjust it later after you take the picture. Optical image stabilization on both of the rear cameras, which is going to help a lot in low light performance, because both of the cameras are going to be super stabilized. I think you're going to get some awesome pictures out of this one. IP68, micro SD card slot, of course. Android 7.1.1 at launch, which is a bummer because we heard about Oreo literally earlier that week. But, I mean, maybe it would be a tall order to expect that Samsung would come out of the gate with Oreo. I bet you they update it relatively soon. Hopefully by the end of the year, I think is what they were saying. Pre-orders now. You can pre-order right now. It's on sale officially September 15th. You're going to get it right around 9:30, 9:50, 9:60, depending on where you buy it, with some deals that we can talk about in a second. But starting with that, with the device, the new look of the Note 8, and everything that Samsung's overcome, Jace, is this your kind of phone? Are you a Note fan? What do you think?
I was a Note fan, but it's
right.
Just
you had the first one.
Way
right?
Too big for me.
Yeah,
it's way too big for me now. I like my favorite is the Sony Xperia Z3 Compact, or now the Z5. I guess what I found most interesting is DJ Ko. He's the Samsung head of mobile there. His response to the criticism of the Note 8 having such a small battery, 3,300 milliamp hours, and he said that the 10 nanometer processor allowed for up to 30% battery efficiency. Okay. Over the Note 7. So I can't wait to get our hands on the device for a full review and actually test that out.
Yep.
Do you guys believe that? What do you think about that? Do you care? A lot of our audience members in the comments were complaining about that and saying, no, it must have had something to do with a safety issue with the battery.
I think it can be both. I mean, I'm not a huge, like, I'm not insanely knowledgeable on the 10 nanometer process versus others, but I do know it carries a lot of benefits, and I wouldn't be surprised if one of those benefits is a more efficient, you know, a more efficient process, which would help on the battery. How much that affects the battery in a positive sense, I guess, remains to be seen. But it's really hard for me to accept that they didn't keep the battery more conservatively sized, based on the fact that that was like the primary reason, one of the primary reasons that the Note 7 lit on fire. So I have to imagine that played into the algebra at least a little bit. So it's probably both as far as I can tell.
Well, they have to play it super safe with this one. That's the thing. Like this, I mean, I, you know, there was a big apology in the presentation, which they had to do.
Yeah, the very front of the presentation.
And I'm the one who a year ago said the Note brand was dead, that they could never go back to it. And it seems as if, like, I expected much more of a backlash to this announcement of like, oh, yeah, we'll see if this blows up or whatever. But I didn't see anybody with it. It seems as if as a community, we've healed from our blowing up wounds. I get the sense that they're going to do everything in their power to make sure that these phones don't blow up ever. So I'm not surprised either.
Yeah. Do you guys remember several years ago it came to light that, you know, Google, Facebook, and Apple, they all have their own sort of PR hack teams, right? So these are teams that clandestinely or secretly try and foil the competition, right? They put out or they seed negative articles or negative press about their competition, right? And it came to light that Mark Zuckerberg had a team that was trying to attack Apple, trying to attack Google, make Google look bad in the public press. And part of me just thinks this would, Apple would do it. Apple would just look for any device that had a battery problem. I mean, if one or two of these devices just have some sort of a fluke problem, you got to think that Apple is just going to fan that flame and try and make sure that, that gets as much press as possible. I don't know how Samsung protects themselves against that, because they only have to make a tiny mistake, but the public is going to think it's a massive one.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to give Samsung a lot of props for how they have maneuvered up until this point. And I mean, the S8 Plus has come out successfully. We haven't heard anything like that. I have to imagine somewhere along the line, one of those, because I mean, one of those have had to, you know, there's had to have been a battery issue on a phone, and along the lines with the many millions of devices out there. I mean, it's just, it's a mathematical formula, you know, a statistic that at least a certain percentage of things are going to happen to an incredibly small number of devices. It just so happened that with the Note 7, that was a larger number. It was still probably, in the grand scheme of things, tiny. Like, no one, like most people had nothing to worry about, but it was large enough for Samsung to correct. And apparently they did a really good job of that, because people are not complaining and people are going back. And not only that, Samsung is making offers to anyone that had a Note 7, whether you returned it or not, you get trade-in value on a number of devices, including like the S7, which you could have got after the Note 7. You know, they gave you the option to do that, as well as iPhones or whatever. Normally, you would get like $150 trade-in value with those devices for the Note 8 through Samsung. Now, if you had the Note 7 at any point, you're registered, you get something like $450 trade-in. So the Note 8, which is expensive, it's almost a grand, ends up being cut in half in price, basically. And that's a pretty good make do.
And I think they had to do that as well too. I mean, they didn't have to, but that they had to make it. They had to go so above and beyond to show off confidence in the device. So this whether or not people actually take them up on this offer or not, from a PR standpoint, and that it shows that, okay, listen, we're making good on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Apparently, DisplayMate says that it has the highest ever A-plus grade of the display on here, 22% brighter than the S8 and expanded color gamut. Also, just another few random pieces of information. If you got the Gear VR, either the one that came with the S7, which is already very outdated, or the one that came with even the S8 and the S8 Plus a few months ago, that Gear VR will not work on the Note 8. You have to get a new one for the Note 8. So that's kind of a bummer that they aren't, that isn't keeping up. I don't know how many people are losing sleep on that, though.
That's the price of progress.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
I suppose so, Ron. You're the price of progress guy.
Well, and there's sometimes also the price of no progress, and that's what's going on over in HTC land.
That's true. Good segue.
So, and I feel like, you know, this is a bit of a broken record, but, you know, HTC apparently is having poor performance company-wide, and so they're exploring their options. And when you think about HTC and high performance, you think of the Vive VR, which is a platform that I hear nothing but good things about, and yet HTC is considering a sale of that, of the Vive VR business or the entire company. Although it's really unlikely that a full sale would happen unless, you know, considering there's so many facets to their business. And currently, of course, Apple and Samsung are dominating the smartphone market, and HTC is having a hard time getting, you know, any sort of traction. And they've been having, I feel like we've said this story how many times in the past 4 years?
Yeah,
like,
I know.
You know,
it keeps happening. And, it keeps bubbling.
A company as itself, purely from a financial standpoint, HTC has lost 75% of its value over the past 5 years, which is such a bummer, because HTC was such, like, I liked them. They were scrappy. They were edgy. They did, you know, they did cool stuff. Currently, right now, their market share in the smartphone division is below 2%. And I get that in these time of financial distress, you look for where your value is, and VR has value for them because VR is hot. But I would say cut bait on the phones and just focus on VR, you know, like that. This is why I'm not running a huge multinational company. But it just seems as if, like, don't explore to sell the good thing of your company. Get rid of the bad stuff that's keeping you down. That's just me. I don't know. But do you think they'll be able to, we'll actually see Vive get sold to someone? Or?
I don't know. And obviously this is a report to Bloomberg, through Bloomberg. So it's not like confirmed. It's like they're exploring options. I can understand why they think to do that. I'm not sure that that doubling down on the Vive would be a boon for HTC, only because at least at this stage, VR doesn't seem to be a boon in and of itself. Well, you know what I mean? Like, Vive is really strong in the VR space, but the VR space is not that big, not compared to smartphones.
And also, when you look at the Oculus price has been dropping. I think I saw it on Amazon now for $399.
Yeah,
like, didn't that thing like launch at like $800? Right,
it's a temporary sale. They're doing it for the summer, and then they're going to boost it back up to the actual new sale price, which I think is $499 or something like that. Still, but yes, it got a $200 drop. So did the Vive. Yeah. So they're both dropping price to kind of keep competitive with each other, and then also, you know, like, you have to imagine, like, it's been out for a couple of years now. And the whole kit, like, that's not the only cost. You also need a really great computer to run it. And so it's hard to get people through the door. And that's holding back large-scale VR. Where do you stand on the VR side of things? Do you think HTC embracing Vive could be the ticket for the company? Or do they need to get out altogether, Jace?
Well, I think that AR has a lot better future than VR, but if I were HTC, of course I'm not, but I would cut my losses and try and exploit a whole new niche and try and be first in that niche. I know it's easier said than done, but being as far back as they are in the smartphone market and the VR market, they just gotta, you know, spend their dimes a little bit more wisely than that. I mean, I feel you, Ron, with the whole HTC thing. I mean, you know, they were the first one to come with the HTC, you know, 10. It was so gorgeous, you know, and they were one of the first manufacturers to make an Android device look beautiful. And I know there's a lot of hardcore HTC lovers out there, and I was hoping they could succeed in VR, but there is another niche somewhere around the corner, 18 months or 3 years from now. And I'd love to see HTC exploit that. But I have a feeling that they're not going to do that. I mean, Steve Jobs predicted that HTC was on a slow death, and he was right about that.
No, that was a while ago too. Yeah. It's just, it's been pretty slow, but it's been
very, very slow. True.
What could HTC do to innovate in smartphones to, like, reignite its brand? Like, they've tried the squeezable side frame thing. And I mean, that's neat. I mean, at this point, innovation in smartphone, it's impossible rare. To do that, right?
It's very rare.
Yeah,
the
market's matured now. So you have, you know, you have your high-end manufacturers like Samsung, and you have the Chinese just taking over everything else, the entry level and mid tier.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in the notes, we were talking about the Xiaomi Mi Mix 2. I mean, I know that device isn't going to be here in the West for most people, but that is a sick device for... It's not cheap, but it's not $1,200 like we're in Canadian $1,200 for the Samsung Note 8.
Yeah.
So for $600, you are getting a fantastic device. Yeah. And how do you compete with that? You just can't. HTC has no hope in that area right now.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if you double down on R&D and you just start getting crazy and you start looking for, you know, and again, I know, you know, like we talked about, is modular a way to go? And currently right now I'm playing with the Motorola's, you know, the Moto Z2 Force and, you know, Aura Dye and stuff like that. But those kind of ideas, whether it's a modular idea or a different paradigm of device, you know, a different, you know, like, you know, like, really, you got to separate yourself out from the crowd. You might not sell as much. You might not do as well in market share. But if you can do a higher end device or a more niche kind of device or a specific use that can give yourself an identity to build from, and then you roll out a lower priced device once people have the brand affiliation. But yeah, I just feel like HTC tries stuff and never sticks with it. That's the problem, you know, and they put out good stuff. They put the HTC 10 is a good phone. It's a good phone.
Yeah, okay. No. I guess the question I have for anyone, any company that's struggling in smartphones right now, is if they were to do what Samsung has done, if HTC put out the Note 8, would it be as successful as it's going to be with Samsung? And I think no matter what, the answer is no, because Samsung has the history. It has the brand affinity built up. It has insane amounts of marketing power, and it's just impossible for anyone to compete, period. You can challenge, you can battle for different segments of the market, but it's diminishing returns compared to what Samsung and Apple have been able to pull off.
$14 billion annually in a marketing budget for Samsung. That's tough to compete with.
you can't compete with that. Not if you're
HTC. Massive, yeah.
That's intense. Well, let's see here real quick before we take a break. We might as well talk a little rumor because it's always fun talking rumors. EvLeaks strikes again with more details on the next Pixel devices and the upcoming event. Little pieces of information here, not much to talk about, but powered by Snapdragon 836, not the 835, which is what we've seen so far. I'm sure it'll be some sort of an incremental update, but I'm curious to know what that brings. If it's a little bit, you know, if it brings a little something extra, maybe it's just an incremental update to the processor and it's not that significant at all. But it's the first one to be carrying this as far as I know of. And then the event is apparently, at this point at least, to be held on October 5th. So we have a date-ish to look at, and I'm sure that'll probably change as we get closer. Maybe a random solar eclipse will come along and they'll move it to match that, although I doubt that, because that doesn't happen. So there you go. We have an idea of an event that we'll definitely be talking about in a month. I guess it's like a day off of the time last year that it happened. So Google's really punctual. They really like having these things like pretty much on the same day. And are we excited, Ron? I mean,
I saw this when it came out, and I think the Snapdragon 836 is interesting. I've been playing with a Pixel. A friend of mine lent me his Pixel to get, you know, kind of give a test drive, and so I've been bouncing between that and the Moto Z2, and it's a good phone. And, you know, as I'm trying to decide on what my next phone is going to be, the Pixel 2 is going to have to blow me away, I think, for me to not upgrade from a regular Pixel if I had a regular Pixel. You know, that's kind of where I'm at. We'll see what they roll out with it, but I'm not totally blown away by these leaks.
Yeah. Maybe they'll give you a good upgrade plan like Samsung did.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. What phone are you using right now, Jace? Did you mention that earlier?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have multiple phones.
Oh, okay.
I have an
one
iPhone
of those.
Too. there's some apps I can't do without. But I'm a Sony guy. I love this Sony Compact so much. I bought like three of them. Gave one to my wife and son, and I use another one too. So love Sony for sure because they give you that flagship power in a compact device.
Ah, okay. Right on.
Mm-hmm. But just a note on the Pixel. I mean, I'm excited that the fact that they're going to have a 5-inch option, and that's fantastic. And there was lots of hope from the original Pixel, or lots of hope for the original Pixel when it came to the Google Assistant. There was going to be, you know, souped up features on that Google wanted to show off. And I know it's a tired subject, but I got to ask, I mean, why should we care about the Pixel anymore? Why should we care about a Google device that's premium priced and just does a lot of things that OEMs are already doing? The Nexus 5, you know, I fell in love with Android with the Nexus 5. And not just geeks. I mean, you saw civilians on the street buying Nexus 5s and loving them. And then, you know, being introduced to what was possible with Android, especially vanilla Android. We don't have any of that romance, that love for Pixel. And it's a bit of a heartbreaker because we know Google can do it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you say that because recently on the show we've been talking about the concept that if there was an Android Hall of Fame, the first phone inducted would be the Nexus 5.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I agree with you. I mean, like, if anything, I have an attraction to the Pixel to try to grasp a little bit of the sentiment of that memory of what a great Nexus phone could be like. And I want pure Android from Google, no in between, no middleman. I hate the UI overlays. That's why I don't like Samsung. It's for years why I didn't actually use HTC because I didn't like, you know, their overlay. I just want pure. That's what's attracting me to the Essential, is that, you know, that is just pure Android, no bloatware, just the, you know, nothing else on there except just the operating system in all of its glory. category. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I think Google really, you know, the Pixel for some reason, I don't know. Jason, you've been using the Pixel much longer than I have. Do you feel that love for it that we had the Nexus 5, the same love that we had for the Nexus 5?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, it's really hard for me to judge, to be honest, because I use so many damn phones at this point. I'm always, I mean, I will say that I'm always happy when I get to go back to my Pixel. You know what I mean? Like, I test a lot of phones. It's always really nice the day that I'm like, okay, I'm done testing. I get to go back to my phone. And I really do like the Pixel for that. I don't know if that's just because it's my phone and it's set up the way I want and I can use it more passively than other things. But I mean, I actually really do like the Pixel a lot. I'm looking forward to the next step. I appreciate that the Pixel is a design language that's closer to Google's heart. Yes, it's more expensive, and there are certainly reasons to complain about that when you compare it against features that are missing, like waterproofing and, you know, a few other things. But I don't know. I enjoy using it. I certainly enjoy using it more than most of the Nexus devices that I have had in the past. It's hard to compare it though to the Nexus 5 because the Nexus 5 was such a long-standing great phone. It also was an insane value. And because you spend that little on a device, you don't expect it to be that good, and it was, and it lasted for a long time. So that's a hard one to compare it to. Meanwhile, you know, this is going to be a year old and I will be happy to get the next one. But maybe that's just like the upgrade, you know, addiction.
Yeah.
More than anything. But I do like my Pixel a lot. So y'all should let us know how you feel about this. This is a great topic to email in. AAA@twit.tv. Let us know what you think. We're going to take a break and thank a sponsor, and then we're going to answer a bunch of your feedback. You guys sent us some really great stuff, and I'm loving that we're getting more of it in on the show lately. It's awesome. Keep sending it in. But let's take a break and thank this week's sponsor, and that is ZipRecruiter. If you're in charge of hiring, you already know that you have the most important job at your company. The people that you hire, you know, they're going to make or break your business. But do you know where to post jobs to find the most qualified candidates? It can be really difficult. I mean, the internet's a really big place. You want to find those people. They are everywhere. You want to find the right qualified people, and that's not always so easy. ZipRecruiter will connect you to the most qualified candidates for any job, including highly sought after tech professionals. With just one click, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites. Their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who posted a job on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate through the site within one day. So no more juggling emails, no more calls to your office. You simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Connect with a wide variety of professionals, including IT experts, and take your company to the next level. That's all you need to do. More than 300 million applications have been delivered. And if you're currently searching for a job, well, here you go. ZipRecruiter will help find your future job in any industry, including technology, government, business, finance, and so much more. You can upload your resume and apply with one single click. Be sure to check out ZipRecruiter's blog for recruiting tips and career advice as well. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all size to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of All About Android. All right, extended feedback time, or we've got like a few here, so we'll tear into as many as we can before the arena. So Ron, you got the first one. Go.
Yeah, first email comes in from Chris, who thanks us for doing a great show. And he says, been listening for a bit now as I mourn Windows Phone 8.1, and I'm trying to decide what my next device will be. I saw this today and I thought I'd share it in case you ran out of cookies. And so Chris shared a photo with us that we could take a look at. But we want to thank Chris for thinking of us as we continue Oreo-a-palooza, Oreo churros, Oreo meets the churro.
What?
Just when he thought it was safe, It's the ultimate mashup. They're churros that are they're Oreos in the shape of a churro, or churros that are tasting with cream filling like Oreos. The Oreo hybridization is just it's too much for me to handle.
Yeah, I don't know how deep we go on this one. Have you ever heard of Oreo churros, Jace? I've never even heard of these things.
No, I haven't. Sorry.
Does it sound delicious at all? Apparently, you're supposed to heat them and eat them. You heat and then you serve.
Wow.
What is a churro?
There's the Canada talking. Yeah, churro it's a mainstay of Disneyland and of other amusement parks. It's a Mexican cinnamon flavored doughy like stick.
Yeah, it's kind of like a donut, but in stick form. It's usually Mexican, warm. Yeah.
Yep. You go to Disneyland. You get a corn dog and a churro and a balloon. And you're having the best day of your life.
Until you ride one too many roller coasters.
Right.
Exactly. Yep. Churros often look like that.
Yep. Or sometimes just long, not loop arounds like that. Yeah. Right. Yep. So.
Dusted with cinnamon.
Yeah. A lot of cinnamon.
Find them at the fairgrounds and stuff like that a lot of the times.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So I guess we have to add that to our list. I don't know if we go into the hybrids, but I'm very curious.
I tell you, Jason, if it's got the word Oreo on it, I want you eating it at some point in the next year.
Oh, man. I'm going to gain some weight over the course of this next year, I bet.
You don't have to eat the whole thing. You don't have to eat the whole thing. Just one bite. That's all it is.
Believe me, that's all I need is a bite. I force myself to eat the whole thing, and it's just... All About Android is just not the time to sit down with a stack of cookies.
Yeah.
But I will, and I will for you. We have a voicemail to 347-SHOW-AAA. You can leave us a voicemail if you like. David did, and this is regarding security updates.
Hi, AAA crew. It's David from Brisbane, Australia here. You've been talking about Sonys and how hard they are to buy in recent episodes. And just to let you know that I had to replace my LG G3 because of the flip chip problem and bought a Xperia X Performance online from Hong Kong. And... yeah, it's a great phone, but one thing that really surprised me with it is that it's actually getting the Android security updates on a regular basis. I've had three since June, and just last night I got the August security patch from Google. And before that, I've had LG and Samsung phones, and they've only ever had operating system updates and never had a security update. So very pleasantly surprised to find that Sony's updating a phone that was a flagship in early 2016. So... well, it might be a bit hard to find in the US, but for listeners in other parts of the world, it might be an option if they want an up-to-date phone with good security support. I love the show. Been a long-time lurker. Cheers.
Thank you, David. Thanks for leaving us a voicemail. And this is like the perfect episode because, I mean, Sony is one of those manufacturers that comes up on the show. And to us anyways, Sony is a curiosity. Like we've played around with Sony devices and everything, but you just really don't see them in large numbers in the U.S. Jace, you've already mentioned on this show a couple of times that you're a big fan of the Sony devices because they're smaller. What has your experience been as far as updates and security updates go for older devices? Uh-oh, we're muted. Hold on, Jace.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
You got it? Yeah. They haven't been as fast as his updates, but pretty fast. I haven't had a problem. It was relatively lean OS. You know, there wasn't any bloatware on it at all for the most part. That's why I liked it. But yeah, I mean, I had to buy them off eBay or Amazon. There's no other place to buy them here, for sure. I mean, you can get the large, you know... Xperia Performance and Xperia X and all that, but the compacts you can't get here. They're just not popular, so you have to buy them through other means. But as far as the updates, pretty good. Not Nexus, but pretty good.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to compare against.
I have to compare. Updates. Mine. Android's breaking my heart.
Yeah, what about your device, the one you're on right now? Has it seen any security updates lately, or at what point does it stop?
Yeah, well, I think the one I have is stopped now. I mean, they promise 18 months, right? Uh-huh. Now we're past that. So, you know, I don't think we've gotten any updates at all. But Sony's pretty good about it, but they're not great. Mm-hmm. They're pretty good.
Yeah. They could all improve. That's just a reality of the of the.
I wonder if anyone's ever going to be perfect. You know, there's always going to be some complaint on that level. So.
Yep.
I did a show about this. I don't know if people know, but like they have to go through a massive process to go through that update. I mean, because Apple has everything from back to front in one system, it's much easier for them. But I mean, there are so many steps that have to go through. It's amazing that they get an update as fast as they do.
But I want faster. we need whatever the next step is from Treble. We need that. On all Android devices, because I feel like that's what Google's working up to. Somewhere over the course of the next couple of years, they can kind of compartmentalize things to a point to where they can handle updates at a deeper degree themselves and have it be faster. Because I mean, it's going to continue being a problem until they figure that out. And I think Treble's the beginning of that. It feels like it, anyways.
Yeah. All right. Well, our next email is a happy story, which I like to hear. Dan from Oshkosh, Wisconsin writes in and says, I want to let you know about a great experience I just had with Project Fi support. My Nexus 6P has been suffering from battery problems where the phone powers down on its own with the battery gauge still reading 20 to 30%. I had that problem on the last few months of my Nextbit Robin. It's crazy. Zero doesn't mean zero anymore. It's 20%. Even though the phone is out of warranty, I pre-ordered it when they first came out. They are sending me a replacement phone. I really appreciate Project Fi and Google standing behind their products.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. It doesn't get better than that.
And that keeps you with Project Fi. That keeps you buying Google products for sure.
Yep.
That kind of support, you know, and that's the same thing that's going to work for Samsung with their big kind of trade in value and everything that they've done for Note 7 users. That's what's working for them too. So good customer service goes a long way. Make it easy. Make it effective. You're going to have customers that come back.
Yep.
I thought this was a great tip. Last week we were talking about home calls on Google Home. And one of the failings or at least missing features for now is that it can't do 911. It doesn't have support for 911, which you would think would be a really great thing to have. You fall down, you're hurt, you know, someone's hurt in their kitchen on the floor, they can't reach a phone, but Google Home's always listening. It would be nice to be able to say, hey, gee, call 911, I need help or whatever, and be able to facilitate that if you have call functionality. Well, it can't do that. CJ Alabek on Twitter sent a tweet in, and it was a great tip. It says Home might not dial 911, but remind people they can program their local police department into their contacts and use that to dial emergency. And I just that's one of those, well, duh, I never thought of that, but of course they can. That's a really great idea. Do that ahead of time. That way, if you're ever in a situation where you need to do something, you've got one, you know, easy access capability to call. It's a great tip. It's a life tip. Pro tip.
It's a good tip. It's a responsible tip. I like that because we didn't think to – we're like, oh, just can't call 911. Moving on.
Whatever.
You know, So at least that's the more responsible side of things. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Jace, do you have a Google Home?
I don't. I don't have any of that yet.
Why not? Your home needs to be smart. Your home wants to be smart.
Yes, we could use some smarts here for sure. But no, I haven't actually used any of those smart speakers at all yet.
See, I'm seeing parts of your shelf that are empty that could be filled with Google Homes.
Yes, it needs some shelf. I just actually set this up, so I'm open to suggestions.
I gave you one suggestion. I've done my part. So work on that.
Our last email is a long one, and Jason, it doesn't look like it has. It's not signed by anyone.
Let me figure that out. You start reading. I'll figure that out.
All right. So we got an email from someone. Jason's going to find out who that is. The email starts out saying, "While I realize that the quote unquote bezel-less phones have all the buzz and sex appeal right now, I'm not seeing enough attention being given to the downside. Your show seems to rave about them, but other media correctly points out the flaws, such as cases." Bezel-less phones make it near impossible to design a proper case to hold the phone. Common wisdom all along has been that you get a case if you care about protecting your phone, which might be worth hundreds of dollars. It's sort of like getting a surge suppressor for your computer. Oh, I've got thoughts. Having a little bit of bezel is essential for the case to wrap around it, but for at least a bit to protect the screen. here's the case I use on my S5. And he provides a link to his S5 case. And this email comes from Scott. Scott R, who writes in, and he's got an S5 with that case that's available on Amazon. I could see that lovely case that just covers so much of the phone. He says, it doesn't really add any significant bulk, but has saved my phone more times than I can count. Notice the tiny bit that the case wraps around the front face of the phone around the edges. This is vital. How do you do this with a bezel-less phone without covering pixels? You can't. So, do phone manufacturers not want us to have cases anymore to ensure more phone breakage and therefore more new phone purchases? Maybe too much of a conspiracy theory, but one must wonder why this feature is being pushed so much, as it doesn't really add any real functional benefits to the consumer. It is driving me crazy, along with the loss of removable batteries, SD card slots, and the headphone jack. I don't want to replace my S5 at this point, and I'm looking to just stockpile spares. Current phones might be faster with more memory and storage, but the design sucks and it's so anti-consumer, I want to scream.
Don't scream.
And Scott, I want to be – I thank you for watching the show and thank you for writing in. But to quote Ferris Bueller, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around, you might miss it. And this is the price of progress. To give a counterpoint to your cases are a must, Jason, you can attest to this. Jason, how long have we been doing this show for?
Oh, how long have we been doing since 2010? So, 2010, 7 years. Yeah.
7 years. How many cases have you seen on my phones?
No cases.
I've never bought a case.
Yeah.
I've never bought a case. In 7 years, how many phones have I broken?
I don't think that you've broken any, have you?
Broke one phone.
Oh.
I dropped the Nexus 5 on a marble bar.
That's right. Yep. Okay.
And I caught the corner and shattered, and then I bought another Nexus 5.
Right.
I didn't buy another case.
Right.
I'm not saying that people are careless with their phones, but there's a way to use them without requiring a case. I know this is I'm in the minority and I'm kind of crazy, but it's fine. Like I've had the Motorola for 2 or 3 weeks now. I haven't dropped it yet. It hasn't broken. It's, and I don't think that a case is like a surge suppressor, because a surge suppressor keeps electrical impulses from frying your computer, right? Where a case just keeps it from hitting the pavement and you might get a ding or something like that. I think of cases like those bumper buddies that go over in front of cars to cover the like, which just is like, why'd you get the car then? Right? So that's just me. The headphone jack is gone, guys. The ship has sailed on the headphone jack. It's not coming back, right? And I'll be honest with you, I'm saving this for my Motorola Z review, but having the dongle with the headphones has been fine and it's been not a problem. But for the first time ever, I'm like, maybe I'll get some Bluetooth headphones. Like, I'm actually considering Bluetooth headphones, because it just, like, it'd be really nice to not have this wire dangling from my ears all the time. With the Essentials 128 gig of storage, you don't need an SD card at that point, right? With fast charging, like the Motorola Z2, the battery ran down. I didn't charge it for like a day and a half. I brought it to work. It was at 20%. I put on the removable, the expansion battery, and it was like at 80% in like 15 minutes, right? Technology is moving forward. We're in an awkward spot right now because the dust hasn't settled. But when the dust is going to settle, it's going to be great and wonderful. It's going to be like the future in Star Trek. So now tell me while I'm wrong.
I was just going to say, not everyone is as careful carrying their phones as you, Ron. You are very good at carrying your phone. I used to be that good until the one time I wasn't. And now I am not good.
Now you're cursed.
Now I'm cursed. Yes. That one time that Nexus 6 fell face first on the concrete, that was the beginning of the end for me. I never used a case before that. And I had no reason to, because I'd never dropped it before that. And then I dropped it. And then I dropped another. Then I realized I had to use a case. I'm going to go ahead and pour fire on the flame a little bit and just point out, this is the Samsung Galaxy S8, S8 Plus. You can see the phone has no bezels on the side. It does have bezels up on the top, right? And this does not mean that you cannot use a case. Check it out. I've got a case.
Look at that.
Pretty simple case. It goes in there. Now, I know what Scott's going to say. Well, where is the protection? What you might be hard to see here is that on your case, it's coming up. The lip of the case is coming up off the display all around. On this, it's coming up off the display on the top and the bottom. That is effectively enough to do the same exact thing. It's not going to hit that glass at all. It is wrapping around the glass here. So even if you go to the sides, you're still not touching the glass on the table. So it is possible to wrap.
The lip on the side, right? The lip on the side protects it?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, there are ways to put a case on these. I understand that the premise, it's also not covering up any pixels. So there are ways, you know, right. Case manufacturers, you better believe they're going to figure out a way to get a case. They make a lot of money off this stuff.
The aftermarket will figure it out. But also, I mean, like, I held the Essential, and the Essential is touting the titanium, you know, the titanium kind of case and all that sort of stuff. And while I did ask if they would let me drop it, and they said no, they said they've done extensive testing. And it holds up, and like that you know, we're gonna have more durable materials that the phones are built out of that can survive a drop.
Yeah.
So
I'm curious, Jace, where do you stand on CaseGate?
I don't use cases myself.
There we go.
On the same boat. I don't use them, and I've smashed one phone, I think, in 10, 12 years. So no, I don't use them. But I also I'm a bit maniacal about small one-handed devices. I want to be able to do things with one hand and have a drink in the other, or walk the dog in the other, and stuff like that. And a case just adds more bulk. So I don't use cases at all.
Yeah, I mean, phones really do feel nice when there's no case on them. They also feel.
I can't hold phones with cases. It just feels wrong. Now I'll take egg on my face when I drop one and shatter it, and then you got to buy another one, and that's the price you pay. But I don't know. It feels better in my pocket. It feels less bulky. So
and it looks nicer. I mean, I realize that this little dorky plastic case on my Pixel, takes the look of the device down a notch. It looks a lot better when it's not in that case. I fully admit that. But I'm just not willing to risk it anymore because I know I'm clumsy. Somewhere along the line, I got really clumsy with my phones. Very aware of that, I'm still very clumsy. What were you going to say, Jace?
What I do put on is Grip. I forget what the brand name's called. You get it on Amazon. It's a skin that you put on the back and the sides. And it's a very grippy, kind of rubbery plastic. It's very, very thin. Doesn't add. And I leave mine just on the back. I don't have it on the sides. So if I have it in my hand, I can, shake my hand a little bit and it won't. I can hold my hand up and it doesn't actually fall down because it grips like Spider-Man web on your hand pretty well. And it can slide in and out of your pocket pretty easily. If you get some of those cases that are meant to be super grippy, getting in and out of your pocket can be a pain.
Yes.
So I use the Grip skin for all my devices.
All right, we are good. It's time to jump in with all of our armor and our gear. It's time to battle in the arena. Let's do it.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
All right, we'll take a look at last week's poll. We had three apps in the arena, episode 331. It was Dinosaurs Among Us, Hurry, Countdown for Birthday Concert, and other things, I think, and Smart Wallpaper. The results are in. And
I am shocked. I am shocked because Dinosaurs Among Us had a hearty lead coming into today.
Really?
Yes, and it came in second.
Wow, so Smart Wallpaper, that was Flo's app, right?
Yeah, Flo gets a first placer. Look at that.
Right on. Go, Flo.
She's not even here to gloat.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm in rough state. Yeah. All right, Ron, what are the standings?
Well, so thanks to Wade County in the chat room for tallying the standings. Through 34 weeks, myself and the guests are tied with 88 points. So, Jace, no pressure there. We're in a deadlock tie. Flo is in second. She has gone from last place now to being 1 point out of second place with 87 points.
Dang!
Although
Flo.
Not being here doesn't really help her
no.
very much.
No.
Jason, you are sitting in last with 84 points. Oof. But you can easily be back in it with a win this week, man. You can easily make it happen. So.
Oh. Boy, yeah. Just real quick, because I didn't read them for the audio listeners. Smart Wallpaper first at 40%. Dinosaurs Among Us second at 38%. So it was very close. And then Hurry last place at 22%. That means Ron is the returning non-winner. I am the returning non-winner too, but winner-er.
Winner-er.
I guess. So Ron, I guess that means you go first.
Yeah, so I was plugging. I was looking around for an app to kind of highlight. I was looking for some new ones, looking at some stuff I've been using, and then I was like, you know what app is? I should really just go with an app that I've been using the most over the past couple of weeks. I was looking for a new game to play while I was on the subway, and I came across this game. It's not a new game. It's not an unpopular game. It's been downloaded over a million times, but it's new to me, and it's never been in the arena. So maybe you'll enjoy it as well. It is called Aqueducts, and basically, I downloaded it because it reminded me, and I'm going to date myself here, but there was an old PC game called, I think, Pipe Dreams.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it was a puzzle game that you would basically build pipes to run water through. No, I'm sorry. It was called Pipe Dreams. That's what it was. Or Pipe Mania. That was also what it called, too. No, Pipe Dream. It was called Pipe Dream. It was by LucasArts, and it was amazing. And so Aqueducts kind of is reminiscent of that. What you've got is you've got a series of aqueducts that by tapping on the different pieces, they rotate in shape. And the idea is to get the water from the source to the other end of it in one straight streaming flow. And it kind of follows the same kind of, step-by-step levels like Angry Birds, that Angry Birds model. But here we are, see Jason, he's got the water there to the left and he can rotate the pieces of the aqueduct. And as he rotates them, they come together and the water continues to flow and the whole goal is to get it to the other end and you got to figure out the puzzle because sometimes the pieces don't fit and it gets, as they introduce different shape pieces, it gets more complicated. You got to rotate that one. There you go. Now, there you go. So give another rotate there. There it is. Oh, one more. And so what's interesting is that the device it uses to get you to either win or lose is there are two kind of choices, and you just made a dead end that didn't work. You see in the upper left-hand corner here, there's a little timer, and it counts the number of rotates that you have. So you only have a certain number of moves. So you could have like maybe 40 moves or something like that. Oh, you're going to do it. You just did it. Nice. Good job.
Yeah,
nice.
Good for you.
So the number, and then now unfortunately there are ads early on in it. This is actually an interactive ad, which I've never seen before. You got to drag that into there or just hit back. There it is.
Oh, you clicked away. That's good.
So now there's either moves where it counts the number of moves and the faster you do it, the more points you get, or some of them have a timer, a countdown. And so you're being timed. You got to do it as quickly as possible. And it's all the same shape pieces. There's some curved pieces. There's some straight pieces. There's a couple of T-bone pieces that can let you, have the water split in two directions. Some really challenging puzzles. They do a really good job of getting you on board very quickly. As soon as you open the game starts. There's no tutorial or anything like that. They just kind of throw you right into it. And it's kind of it's this level-based game that you feel really satisfied when you figure something out that you've been stuck on. And they do a really good job at – it's got the pretty kind of 3D design. It's got some soothing music. It's a fun game. Now, what I also liked about this is that it's free to download. And then every now and then in the first three kind of map levels there are – you hit that arrow. There you go. Pause right here for a moment, Jason. So here you're on level one where there are six games, right? There are six levels. And then if you go to level two, there's seven more. And then after you finish level three, starting at level four, they're all unlocked, but it's pay what you want. And there's everything from 99 cents to $2 to $3.99 to $4.99 or to zero, right? And if you pay zero, it continues to give you ads. But if you pay as little as 99 cents, it unlocks all the ads.
Oh, nice.
And it unlocks all the levels and you don't get any more ads, which I thought is a really nice kind of touch. And pay what you want is really kind of, I feel like, user empowering in that regard. It's like you're enjoying the game. Great. Pay what you think it's worth. And I pay $2.99 because I want to support the developers that are entertaining me. This is just a fun game. It's great. It's great to kill some time while you're, on the commute or anywhere else where you're sitting and you're just looking for something to kill time with. So Aqueducts, free in-app purchase, reminds me of Pipe Dreams, one of my favorite games from the 90s. So
nice. I love it. This is addictive and I can't stop.
Yep.
I love the art style too. It's got a nice,
very nice.
Oh man, I might be fast on, I'm quick on this one. Boom. Oh yeah. it's like I'm an Aqueducts pro.
Yeah. I like the subtle Roman kind of aqueduct kind of, stylized, kind of approach. So
yeah, cool. Aqueducts. And free with in-app purchases. Pay what you want and reveal all levels when you do that. Yeah. Awesome. Great pick. Let's see here. So, Jace, I have your app installed, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, me too.
All right, talk about it. I'll show it off while you chat about it.
Okay. So what they're laughing about is the fact that I'm going to take a hit right away because the design of the Android version of this app is less than stellar. Okay. It's Pocket Informant. Now, stop giggling because this app does some crazy good stuff. So it's someone who spent, I don't know, my wife doesn't watch it, so I can say it, like $200 or $300 trying to find a great calendar, task manager, life organizer app. This hits the sweet spot because the problem is a lot of these apps are either super simple, too simple. They're not geared towards power users. And the ones that are geared towards power users are super freaking complicated and time consuming. I mean, you have to set aside organization time to organize your app, right? It's ridiculous. So now this hits a sweet spot because you can spend just minutes a day organizing your week, your month, or whatever, and it does all the typical things you want. You want it to sync across multiple devices. It also syncs cross-platform. So if you're like many people and you have an Android phone but you have an iPad, those devices are going to sync up no problem. Now, the other thing it does, if you are a power user and you really want to do get into projects and keywords and tags and stuff like that, you can do that too. I mean, you can totally geek out. You can even do project completion rate. So this project is 20% done. This project's 80% done. And you can share it and collaborate too, although that's really not its strength. But this is one of two apps that keep me on iOS because the Android or the iOS version is just designed so well. But they have a desktop version and also a Mac version that's really well done, and that looks fantastic. And I can't live without that. I absolutely love it.
When did so they have this for iOS? Does it look like, is the design similar to this on iOS?
Totally different.
Totally different.
They need to update their design money on iOS, not Android, unfortunately. But the functions are still in the Android version.
Got it.
So if we clamor enough, they're going to change the design and make it look like a chip.
Sure, they will.
if everyone rises up and votes for this in this week's arena, they're going to update this app. They haven't updated it since November 25th, 2015, but they are going to update this app, by God. I promise you that.
I had to choose an app that I was passionate about and ready to fight for.
Honestly, I actually love that you brought in this app because sometimes it is pretty great to go back in time and take a look at design, you know, that's maybe a little outdated, maybe a little bit more than a little, but if it gets the job done, if it does the task,
that's half the battle, right?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of apps in the Play Store that people still use. Like, I still get recommendations for certain apps, and I look it up, and it hasn't been updated in a very long time. But, I mean, you know, people swear by this app. They've been using it for years. They know how it works. It does exactly what they need to do. Why wouldn't they recommend it? Because it fills that need, you know, so... There you go. Awesome stuff. It's called Pocket Informant. If you're looking in the Play Store, it's listed as Informant, and it's by Fanatic Software, so you can check it out for yourself. And then I have a game that I have a game that I had never played the first one, but apparently it was pretty popular. It's called Framed 2, and it's a very unique styled puzzle game, and I'll show you kind of how it works. I thought of Ron when I saw this because it has kind of a comic book quality to it. Cool. Basically, the idea behind this game is that you're watching a story play out over time, and how that story is played out depends on the order of the tiles that you fit up. So it looks like a comic book, right? You see the play button up here. So we're going to preview what's happening right here. Right now, my guy is being chased by a dog or about to be chased by a dog. So the dog runs away. There's my guy running away from the dog. And then it enters into this tile. My guy runs around here. Oh, the dog catches me in and I'm dead. So that's obviously the wrong sequence. So let's see here. So how about I move this over here?
That's cool.
And I'll go ahead and play it. So it comes around. The dog doesn't catch me. and I'm able to jump the fence. The dog doesn't catch me. Great. All right. So I made it to the next one. So now I'm going to go over to the bicycle and I'm going to ride away. But what do you know? I enter the next frame and there's the guy that arrests me and I'm done. So, and I hate to say that I had to look this up because this had me stumped for like 15 minutes. And I was like, I don't get it. Like, I played with all the orders and I couldn't figure it out. And I realized something new about this game. So let's see. Let me try and remember how I do this again, because now that we're live, I'm not remembering exactly how it goes. So I might still mess it up. But the guy runs around, then comes here. Then I think I go, which way do I do? Do I go like this? Can't remember. Okay. Runs around to the bike. And then, let's see here. Goes there. Yep. Over onto the board. Out.
Oh.
And I come around behind the guy and I win. So I've just passed the level.
Cool.
So it's a puzzle game that's based on kind of like comic book boards that you really play with the story as it goes along, and each of them presents a different kind of order of puzzles, and you got to figure out how it all pieces together. Very unique, totally unique art style, tells a cool story. See, I just fell into the water and that's it. So I would have to figure it out and redo it. And as you saw in the last one, it's not always as simple as put them in order and let go. Sometimes you have to reorder them as you're going to play things twice in order to get through. Anyways, it's called Framed 2. It's a $4.99 game. It was on sale not too long ago. I got it for way less than $4.99, so a little pricey for a game, but it's a lot of fun, and I guarantee you it's going to take you some time because these puzzles are really well thought out, and just the art style is just worth it. And while you're at it, check out Framed 1, because apparently it's a very popular series. The first one was extremely popular. I had never heard of it, but now I want to play it because this one's so much fun. So Framed Part 2. All right. That's the arena. We've got twit.to/AAApoll332 to place your vote for your favorite app or game from the episode. Is it Aqueducts? Is it Informant? Or is it Framed 2? twit.to/AAApoll332. You can place your vote, and we'll check in on it next week and see who wins for the week. And it's getting close. I can't believe that we're this far into the year already.
I know. It's crazy. What is Victor going to vote for?
Framed. Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're going to have to verify with reCAPTCHA.
Not cool, Victor, man. Not cool.
It's asking you to
I don't know,
verify,
guys. Look at the vote so far. Uh-oh.
Yeah, and Foreman is running away with it.
I'm losing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Come on, Andrew and Army.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, it's an go. Even. We're even. It's evenly split with 10 votes. That's pretty awesome. Yep. All right, cool. Well, we'll check in on that next week as we usually do. But that is it. I think we've reached the end. We have nothing more to talk about except for all the awesome things that we are up to, starting with you, Jace. Thanks again for coming back. It was great to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. What do you want people to know? Where can people kind of follow what you're working on? Is there anything specific that you're working on right now that you want to tell people about?
Well, I am always digging hard for leaks and rumors and trying to share that. I do 3 shows a week. You guys, most of you probably already know, I'm on YouTube usually Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. If not, soon thereafter.
Right on. So if they go onto YouTube, they just do a search for Android Authority and you're on the official channel?
That's right. You can follow me on Twitter. I tweet tech stuff and also non-tech related stuff, other stuff I'm into also. But AndroidAuthority.com is great. But most of my viewers know me from YouTube for sure.
Right on. Excellent. Well, thanks, Jace. It was a pleasure getting you back, and we'll have to have you back here again sooner than this last time.
It was great. I know I've said this before, but I've been a Twit fan since old Leo was in his kitchen. Like in 2007. So to be on here is a big deal for me because, I fanboy out a little bit. So it was great to see you guys. Thanks for having me again.
Right on, man. It's always a lot of fun to get you on. We'll talk to you soon. We'll bring it back. It was our pleasure. Ron, what are you working on? Are you at the end of Twin Peaks yet, or what's going on?
We're almost there. So if you go to damnfinepodcast.com, me and Tom Merritt have been analyzing every episode of Twin Peaks, the new show on Showtime, the new season. season. The finale, the two-hour finale, is this Sunday. We're very excited. We've got some returning guests on the show, comic book artist and writer and cinema storyboardist Gabe Hardman, and my life partner for my fanboy, Connor Kilpatrick, are going to come on. We're going to break it all down this Sunday. And we're going to say goodbye to Twin Peaks again and wait for another 25 years, maybe. But it's been a wonderful ride. And then, of course, you can go over to ifanboy.com, where me and Connor and my other partner, Josh, are there talking about comic books and comic book TV shows and movies. We reviewed The Defenders, the latest series on Netflix. And we're going to be, you know, doing some more, you know, the Inhumans TV show that's coming up this September. We'll be talking about that. So definitely go to ifanboy.com to check all that out. Follow me on RonXO at RonXO on Twitter. As Damn Fine Podcast winds down, I have a new podcast that's going to be launching in September. So keep an eye out for that as well. You can follow me on Twitter to see all that fun stuff. So
of course you do, Ron.
Yeah, of
You're
course.
Addicted to podcasts.
I can't. I don't like free time, apparently. So
you got to fill every ounce of your time. I understand. Yep. I've been the same way.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll look forward to that. I'm at yellowgoldmusic.com. Man, I'm like this close. I was looking at my to-do list for the album, and it's like very bare at this point. So
very
it's
exciting.
Like within sight. I'm so stoked to finally, because I can't tell you this enough. I am so sick of listening to the music on this album. Like, I've been working on this stuff for 3 years now, and I'm so sick of it. So I can't wait to move on. I don't know if that's an endorsement or what, but I'm ready to move on, and it's not going to be very much longer. So I will tell you all about it when I have something, and I will post all that information at yellowgoldmusic.com or jasonhowell.net if that's easier for you to remember. But that is it for this show this week. Really appreciate you guys tuning in and week out, downloading, subscribing, all that stuff. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us emails and videos to AAA@twit.tv. If you want to send a video mail, you can do it there. Find us on Twitter. We are at Android Show. We have a subreddit, which is twitaaa.reddit.com. You can send us stories. We'll make sure to include those in this show. Show notes and past episodes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA. That's where you go to subscribe to the show. So make sure that you do that. And you can also find our stuff on YouTube, iTunes, Pocket Cast, everywhere fine podcasts are found. And you can catch us live every Tuesday starting around 5:30 p.m. Pacific and probably soon after, eating some type of Oreo cookie at twit.tv/live. That is it for this week's episode of All About Android. We welcome Florence Ion back to the table again next week. She's definitely missed. We'll see y'all then. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.